It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women ignite their inner desires to powerfully step out of the closet and into the light of living authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt or shame, Rick offers take action tips for basking in the glow of self-love, easy to implement tools for wrapping yourself up in the warm embrace of self-acceptance, and take it to the bank advice on how to step courageously into a powerful, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, insights for living authentically as a gay or lesbian, and challenges you to step out of the ordinary and into your extraordinary life. Pull up a chair, cuddle up with the truth of who you've always been, and let's spend an hour in the Coming Out Lounge discovering how to energetically step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your truth. And today's truth is sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen when you've been a happily married man with kids, even when you've been leading your church as the leader. But before we get to that, let's talk about who he is right now. He's a happily married guy. A gay man to his husband, David. They've been together almost a decade now, but as I already kind of gave you some insights, that wasn't always the case. In another life, he was a Baptist pastor who was married to a woman. He was raising his three children. But man, was he struggling. He was struggling with this just horrid conflict that was eating him alive inside. But then to kind of deal with that struggle, he turned to Exodus International and to reparative therapy to basically rid himself of his gayness, so to speak. For 3 years, he put his heart and soul into that and really tried to get to that full recovery place. You know, no one really wanted to be not gay more than him. He read all the books. He went to all the conferences. He listened to all the speakers. He attended retreats. He worked through reparative and group therapy. He even went to individual therapy on a weekly basis, sometimes even several times a week. And most of us can relate to how he felt. He prayed, he cried, he surrendered, he said, "I don't want to be this." He tried and he tried and he tried. Just the way most of us do as we are thinking about coming through those closet doors. And after nearly 3 years of all that, he finally stopped. He surrendered and he began living. Today on the Coming Out Lounge is a guy I found to be very authentic in who he is. He's come to a different space in his life. His name is Joel Barrett, and he preaches a message of living authentically from a space where authenticity isn't motivated by fear. It's just by being who you are. And it's his goal as he does his work to really truly encourage people to live and build bridges of understanding between what some would call seemingly opposite communities. And I'm really glad to welcome to the Coming Out Lounge, Joel Barrett. Joel, thanks for being here today with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rick. It's really great to be a part of this.
Absolutely, Joel, and I really appreciate it. You and I have some similarities in our journey. We'll talk a little bit about that. But what intrigued me most about you when I found you was this focus on authenticity and this focus of really stepping in and being yourself. So I kind of gave everybody listening the preview of your life. You know, you were a pastor, you were married, you have three kids. And actually, just before we went on the air here, you told me you have two grandchildren. So life was definitely different not long ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was completely different. Yeah. In fact, I was just yesterday traveling with my husband to back from Chicago, and we were listening to some music, and the song "I Could See Clearly Now, The Rain Is Gone" came on, and I told him again, as I've told him many times, I'm like, man, that was my theme song for a while when I first started coming out, because I just felt like I was seeing everything in the world clearly for the very first time.
You know, and I think this is something that I think we think about might happen, and it doesn't, and I want to kind of put this in a bigger frame. It's not just about coming out that we may see things more clearly. You know, it's not just about coming out on our sexuality. I think a lot of us find this, whether we're coming out as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or whether we're coming out through some other trauma in life, that sometimes we've got to go through these challenging, traumatic times in order to see things clearly. And I'm sure in your work in ministry, you've seen this over and over again in people from many walks of life, correct?
Yeah. I mean, there is no shortcut. I mean, and living an authentic life is a journey that, you know, happens every day. But you do have those breakthroughs and those times when you suddenly realize, oh, everything I've thought about this is actually keeping me from being who I am or keeping me from living authentically. Right. And I think those are really important moments in life when you have those breakthroughs.
Well, I think the breakthroughs are really important because if we don't experience what we need to experience to get through them and get to those big moments, then we can't continue to go through life and address other things that show up. It's like a continuation of stuff that always is going on.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you've got to... It's scary. I guess that's, to me, it comes down to fear. And this is why people don't make changes in their life. Most of the time, when you break away at it, it comes down to just fear of the unknown, fear of what might happen, fear of what you might lose. And boy, that fear can be really powerful and controlling. And
so I'm curious for you and for others, but let's talk about you. Why do you see fear as being very controlling?
Well, it's a powerful force because it makes me think of being a child and being afraid of the dark and what you think might be under the bed or in the closet. And your mind begins to play with that and make it seem much bigger than what it is. And as you know, when you're an adult, you suddenly realize, oh, there was never anything under the bed. There was never anything in the closet. But boy, when you're a kid, that seems very, very real. And something that could really harm you. And so, you know, you pull the blankets over your head. Most of the time, kids don't get up and go open the closet door to see what's in there, or don't get down on their hands and knees and pull up the bed skirt to see what's under the bed. Instead, you just stay there and you pull the blankets over your head and you hope that, oh no, I hope what I fear isn't real and it's not going to hurt me. And, you know, it's not much different in life as an adult. We kind of do the same thing. It's easier sometimes to just stay where you are, pull your covers over your head, close your eyes real tight, and hope that somehow something's going to be different than what it currently is.
You know, I love that this metaphor of hiding under the blankets and, you know, hiding from whatever is underneath the bed has shown up in this podcast today, because I never even thought of coming out that way until you brought it up. I think it's a very powerful metaphor. And oftentimes, if we give ourselves permission to pull the blankets back down, go ahead and look under the bed, what we'll often discover is things aren't nearly as scary as we make them up to be. It's just human nature.
No, not at all.
We create this. We, you know, I think you've heard, because I know we do similar work, and again, back to your ministry, we tend to create a lot of stories, but the story is not really the story, and this will probably really mess with some people's minds, so I'll say it really slowly. The story is not really the story until it's the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for those who are struggling with this coming out journey, the story isn't going to be what the story is until you walk through the door, and then it's the story.
You know, I totally understand the fears, but I encourage people to ask the question, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And really start chipping away at these fears by asking themselves that and looking at it. Because, I mean, you know, maybe coming out, you're going, well, oh man, I would lose all of my friends. You know, maybe you have a circle of friends right now that would not be accepting. And you say, man, I would lose all my friends, because I was there. I was in a very religious environment, and I knew that once it came out, even that I was struggling with my sexuality, not even just to say I'm out, but even to admit that I was going to Exodus International for help, still would have cost me my friends. And that was a big scary thing for me. It was all I knew. And I remember talking to a life coach, a friend of mine at the time, and I expressed that fear. And she's like, okay, well, let's just back off of that and say, what if you do? So you lose all your friends, then what?
Right.
And then it was like, well, I guess I'd have to make new friends. She's like, yeah. You know, and suddenly I started going, oh, well, I guess I could do that. You know, that's not so bad. I've made these friends. I could make more friends and so on and so forth. And when you start unpacking that a little bit, you start realizing that these fears are they're not insurmountable. They are scary and they can be a real challenge. But you start realizing, oh, well, I could do that. And then that becomes empowering. Because then as you start to do it, you realize this is what my experience was. I'm like, oh, wow, I can do this. There are people out here, you know. And to my surprise, there were also people that are still my friends from that time who I had prejudged them and thought, oh, they would never accept me. And much to my surprise, they did.
Mm-hmm. I think this is something I want people not to miss, because you just hit on something very, very poignant in the coming out journey. We go through a piece of this in our journey and continue as gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender, where people judge us. It's part of the makeup, and it's part of the human race just in general that we tend to judge each other. But in the coming out journey, we tend to feel a lot of judgment. But what I think is the piece that many of us don't get as we're going through the journey, especially as we're contemplating coming out and walking through that doorway for the very first time, is we are putting a lot of judgments on everybody else as well. And I love that you use the term prejudgment. Mm-hmm. We tend to prejudge what we think people are going to think of us. Now, that's common. I mean, this is a scary space to be. This isn't something we've ever done before. And so suddenly we don't know the outcome. So, of course, we're going to prejudge. But sometimes I think that prejudgment keeps us from really trusting that others are going to actually go, okay, so what? In fact, I have this great card that somebody sent me at one point in time in my life that says, on the front of it says, so you're gay. And on the inside it says, that's all? ?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we forget that some people are going to actually feel exactly that way. Okay, so mm-hmm. what? You know. But let's kind of, when you and I did the pre-interview, we talked a little bit about the Exodus experience, and I don't really want to make this the focus, but for you, that experience, and this isn't, I'm saying what I'm about to say just to share, people, I don't want this to be that I'm casting a judgment or anything, or, you know, saying these sort of programs are great, but for you, contrary to what a lot of people try to paint, the Exodus experience was not a horrible experience for you personally, correct?
There were elements of it. No, I would not use the word horrible, but you know, this is a really good segue at this point, because what we were just talking about not prejudging people.
Right.
Actually, that was something that when I first started getting help, when you look at reparative therapy, ex-gay therapy, whatever you want to call it, and there are many different names for it, but the one of the main focuses is, why are you this way? Well, maybe you had an overbearing mother or a absentee father, or you had some kind of sexual abuse, or, you know, the list gets long. And then for me, one of the things they said to me was, well, you've never had a healthy relationship with other men in your life, so you've always sexualized those relationships in your mind. And so you look at men from a sexual standpoint. So you need to learn how to have authentic relationships with men that are not sexualized. So, you know, that's not bad advice. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how completely accurate that was. But at the same time, what it did do for me is they encouraged me. They was like, start including, letting people know what's going on in your world, because I had shut myself off from anybody. Nobody knew what was going on, because I was always convinced that if anybody ever knew the real me, they would certainly reject me, because I hated myself and I knew everybody else would too. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'd been taught all of this religious stuff about being gay. And so it was a really scary thing. So what I did do is I started selecting some people in my life at the time and told them the truth about what was going on. And like I mentioned earlier, I did lose some friends, but I also found some real authentic friends who said, well, that's okay, Joel, you know, we don't, that doesn't change anything. And so the irony of all of that is what that did. It didn't make me not want to be gay, but it did make me realize that I could be gay and that it was okay. And that I didn't have to fear all of this rejection. And it gave me, empowered me to continue to be myself. So the more I was authentic with other people, the more empowered I became. So it kind of had, I always kind of laugh about it because it's almost the exact opposite result of what they were hoping would happen. So it had no bearing, no impact at all on me being gay or not. But what it did do is it started helping me learn how to have better, authentic relationships with people and being my real self to them. And that's very empowering.
So, okay, I'm going to do one of those big question things, but you kind of walked into it. So what does authenticity really mean for you, Joel?
Well, you know, I think about that a lot, and sometimes I struggle myself to even define it. But I think it's being who you are all the time, mm-hmm. and without regard to the consequences, in a sense. I mean, you're just saying, this is who I am. I am real. So it's always a journey, and it's a daily struggle. It's not like one day you wake up and go, from now on, I am going to be authentic. But I can look at my day and say, is this true to who I am? Am I investing in my life? You know, what am I spending my time doing? Who are my friends? What am I working at? And, you know, you look at all of that and go, is this helping me become better at who I am? So I try to look at everything in life that way. I mean, I meet people sometimes and I go, you know, nice person, but I don't think that's a person that I want to include real close to me. Because I don't think they're going to encourage me to be who I am. It's not compatible.
I think that's a really beautiful definition, because I think each of us have our own, but you hit on a lot of highlights. And I have to just make note of something. I know that Joel's sitting outside, and what I'm loving about this, and I think there's some divine intervention happening here. And as you listen to this, now that I'm going to say this, now everybody's going to be waiting to see if it happens. Every time the chimes start blowing in the wind behind him, it's when he's saying something really powerful. I don't know if anybody else is catching this, but as I'm listening to him speak, I'm like, oh, it's almost like the chimes are giving some little applause, because each time that chime starts, Joel has just said something very powerful. And this piece of authenticity, if nobody walks away with anything else from what we've talked about today, is just like you coming out of the closet and you doing it your own way. Each one of us is going to do it our own way. Being authentic is each of us doing authenticity our own way. And I think the quicker we can grab on to that concept that authenticity means this to me, and coming out means this to me, and being in love means this to me, the more we begin to really allow our differentness in who we are as individuals shine through. But also, here's the caveat piece, also appreciate that in others. Then that's when it makes things much easier. I think one of the things that I've kind of drawn a line in the sand on, and I'd love to hear what you think of this, Joel, is I often believe that sometimes the reason individuals, you know, we can put the Bible stuff front and center, because that's where a lot of people have problems with homosexuality, is their interpretation of the Bible. So we're going to put that there, that's one of the reasons that drives people. But I have a different theory. I think sometimes the reason people get so up in arms about us as gays and lesbians is because we are stepping forward and being our truest self. And for someone who hasn't been able to do that in their own life, it pushes their button.
And indeed often, it does, yes.
And I think much more, I mean, yes, I honor people's beliefs. I mean, trust me, and I think you probably get this more than anyone, Joel, having come from being a Baptist minister. I honor people's beliefs, their religious beliefs. Those are yours. I won't want to tell you to change them. I just want you to know I respect them. In turn, I ask that you respect mine. Now, that's a big ask for a lot of people in the world. But what I do believe is when we're put into a position to really look at our authentic selves, man, those mirrors that other people show, and I see it daily because, like you, Joel, I really try to be as authentic as I can, but man, there's days that I go, I can't, you know, and then I'll catch myself and I feel like I've fallen, but it's all part of our growth. So, did you ever feel that once you've done the Exodus thing and then you stood in your own world and you finally were standing proudly, did you ever feel any backlash from our own community coming into the quote gay and lesbian community as somebody from Exodus? Did you ever get any backlash?
I don't believe so. No. It was more, it's just fascination. People are always really interested in asking me lots of questions about it. But no, I didn't have any negative repercussions from that. No, some people thought I was a little crazy for going through it. Like, sure. They just couldn't understand why you would have even chosen, because it was a choice, you know?
Right.
Nobody forced me into it.
Right, right. Well, it's kind of the same thing. I don't know if you had ever had this, but I've had it a couple of times. People go, but you chose to go get married. Why did you do that? And it's like, wait, it's, you need to kind of, you need to back up first. You weren't me, number one. You weren't living at the time in my life when those decisions were being made. And there was a whole different thing happening in my life that was my socialization that said, this is where you're supposed to go. And I honestly believe that path was my path. I mean, I still buy that, that that was my path to get me where I am today. And I think sometimes we forget those things.
And there's not a lot of benefit in looking back in regret, because right. life just is what it is. And so, you know, I could look back on lots of parts of my life and think, well, man, what would happen if I had just been a young man who was gay and, you know, just went out into the world as a gay man and never gotten married? What if I'd never grown up in church? What if I'd never, you know, all those what ifs. But the truth is, I am who I am today because of all of those. Mm-hmm. And if I live in regret and think, man, I wish that had never happened, well, then I'd be saying, I wish I didn't have my three beautiful kids. You know, I would probably not be sitting here today talking to you or writing a book and working on all these things if I'd never gone through all of that.
So, let's talk about that a little bit, because I know you are writing this book, and I noticed a couple of people have said, why is it that title and not something else? So tell the listeners the title of your book.
Well, I chose the name Godly But Gay.
And I know some people are going, well, why don't you just say, call it Godly and Gay? So I'm curious about why you chose that title.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time explaining this because that is the most common thing.
And that's exactly why I'm bringing it up, to help you kind of, okay, so when he becomes a New York Times bestseller, he's already put it out to a few thousand people who are listening to this. But
the title is representative of how I felt in life, because when I was growing up in fundamentalist independent Baptist churches, this was, you know, usually when I say I grew up Baptist, people, I say very conservative Baptist, and people will say, oh, you mean like Southern Baptist? I'm like, no, we actually thought the Southern Baptists were too liberal. So this is a very conservative brand of fundamentalist Baptist religion. And so growing up in there, there was always this emphasis on living a godly life. That was the word that was used. So you wanted to be as much like God as possible. You wanted to live in a place where God could bless you and this fully surrendered life to God. So it was all this emphasis about being godly. And I really embraced that. I mean, I spent that whole part of my life trying as hard as anybody to be godly. That's all I wanted, because I knew that that would please God. So I was on this track. I was always thinking about that. But then the irony was that the entire time I also was gay. Of course, I didn't use that term then, but I knew I had this problem. And I knew that no matter how much good I was doing, the moment anybody would find out that I was gay, all of that goodness would just be pretty much erased and thrown in the trash, because the two could not be compatible. And I had heard that very clearly preached throughout all of my life. You know, being gay is like the trump card of sin. if you are gay, I used to say, I think I could be on death row and have more friends and forgiveness than I would from being gay. you know.
Right, absolutely.
And I say that some of my Christian friends and some of my own family members say they hate me with the love of Christ. Mm. And
ooh, that's powerful.
And yeah, I chose the name because it represents that constant struggle that was going on in me. Is like, I'm godly, but if you knew this, I wouldn't be. And so I'm godly, but I'm gay. And if, you know, it's one or the other. It can never be both.
All right.
And so that's the name.
So how did you transition from feeling like everything would send you to this horrible place and be trashed, all that goodness you're doing? How did you move from that to who you are now?
Well, it took a lot. And really, it was just this. People sometimes say, when did you come out? And I say, well, I didn't come out. I oozed out, because it was just this really long process. But, you know, when I was getting counseling, when I was going through therapy and all of these things, I was working through all of this stuff and trying to be, and I was becoming a more authentic individual during that time. But I also really, it was like I talked about that song earlier. As I began to unpack things and peel the onion layer after layer, I started seeing things more clearly. I started taking a look at churches and what I had believed, and started realizing that so much of what I believed was not really Bible-based. It was somebody saying, this is what the Bible says. And when you didn't realize kind of how brainwashed you were. And as you begin to unpack it and move away from it, you start seeing it clearly and go, well, wait a minute. And being willing to ask the hard questions. And so after almost 3 years of therapy, I'll tell you, the turning point for me was I was really discouraged, trying to do everything, you know, the way I was told, and behavior modification and behavior modification and think, you know, all these different thought patterns, and praying lots and lots and lots of praying and crying and all of that kind of stuff. And I just felt, I was in this group with about four other men, and they were all exactly where I was too. Like, nobody seemed to be any farther along in this process than me.
Right.
And so I emailed, I had transferred from the Exodus International Counselor to a counselor that was like approved by them. He wasn't actually affiliated with Exodus, but he was in their network of approved counselors. And so I emailed my original counselor and just said, you know, hey, I'm getting really discouraged. I don't feel like I've made any progress, any significant progress. I don't know anybody that's any farther down the road than this other than a few national speakers, but that was about it. And so I said, can you please connect me to some guys that are just like me, just normal guys? They aren't national speakers. They're, you know, they're just a little bit farther down the road than me, that could look back at me and say, oh, come on, it's going to be so much better, you know?
Right.
And he emailed me and told me that he couldn't do that. And when I asked why, he said, well, basically everybody falls into one of two categories, the kind of people you're talking about. One, that this is a part of their life. Nobody ever knew about it. They don't want anybody to know about it. They were ashamed of it. They've dealt with it, moved on, closed door. They don't talk about it. Or number two, this is something they dealt with, they've moved on, but they're afraid that if they were to talk to somebody like you, they would just be pulled right back into it. Mm. And on that day, I said, so that's your success stories. Those are my options. I'm going to live like one of those two people. And neither one were acceptable to me, because that did not feel like authentic living to me. And I was literally on that day, I read the email, I had printed it off. This is in the days before the kind of smartphones we have today.
Right.
And I printed it off. I was sitting there reading it. I could still remember exactly where I was reading it. And I wadded it up and I threw it into my yard. And I said, then I'm done.
Wow.
And I said, I have a life to live. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start living. I don't know exactly what that means, but I am no longer going to do this. And, you know, that was the best decision I ever made.
And the chimes agree with you. It's again, it's so powerful. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like truly just freaky how this is showing up this way. So yeah, so now things have changed, and in the last few minutes that we have together, and I could talk to you for hours on end just because we have a similar background and different paths and yet similar paths that we've taken, but now you have a really beautiful life. You're married for almost how long now?
We'll be 10, well, it's 9.5 years, so wow. We're going on 10.
That's awesome. And you have three kids.
I do. I have three young adult children and two granddaughters, and people always say, well, how's your relationship with the kids? It's wonderful. I raised my kids, and it's a beautiful, beautiful relationship.
Okay, so I want people that are out there that are in this space to hear what he just said, because it kind of validates what I try to say frequently. You can do this.
And exactly.
It is a choice. And what I'm talking about here is that a choice to keep the relationships alive that are most important to you. Yes, there may be some people who try to step in and try to keep those relationships from being alive, but I can tell you, and I can hear it in Joel's voice and the way he just talked about his children, if you choose, and it is a choice, if you choose to be in your children's life as you come out and beyond, if you choose, no matter how much somebody else may try to keep them away from you, if you choose to be there, your kids will be fine. Your kids
will
make it through this. Now, granted, there's going to be some roadblocks because sometimes the other spouse gets really nasty and ugly and all that. But I want you to know, if you continue to say, they're my kids, I want to be part of their life, you can make it happen. It may take some work, but you can make it happen. So really quickly here, Joel, I'd love for people to be able to stay connected with you. So give him, he's got a podcast just like I do. What's the name of your podcast?
Well, you can find all the information on joelspeaksout.com.
Awesome.
And Facebook, same thing. Twitter, same thing. It's all Joel Speaks Out.
Yep.
And the podcast is on truefmonline.com.
And I would gather from the name of the podcast that it's a lot about you speaking out about lots of different things. Is that true?
That is exactly true. It's very eclectic in nature. Sometimes it's just me. Sometimes I have guests on.
Awesome. Awesome. And, you know, this is the Coming Out Lounge. And one of the things I do as we wrap up each show is I ask the guests to give listeners one piece of advice. So what would your piece of advice be to anyone who's going through these challenges of coming out?
My favorite quote is from the movie Anti-Mame, and it's, "Life's a banquet, so live." And that's there's a little bit more to the quote than that, but that's the basic premise, is life is a banquet. Now, go live.
Exactly, and go live. And that's what we're going to encourage each of you to do today. Joel, I want to say thank you for being with me today on the Coming Out Lounge. I really appreciate it. And if you've really enjoyed what Joel and I have been talking about and his story, make sure you hop on over there to iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you like to listen to us, and give us some love. Also, don't forget to go visit Joel at his websites as well, joelspeaksout.com. And you know what? If you really are digging what's going on here on the Coming Out Lounge, you can always catch up with me on Facebook at The Coming Out Coach. Also, you can catch me at Rick Clemens on Twitter as well. And man, I think, what's your Twitter handle, Joel, real quick before I
Joel. It's Joel Speaks Out.
Joel Speaks Out. I want to make sure it was the same. So you can catch both of us at Joel Speaks Out or at Rick Clemens if you want to tweet out some love to us. And with that, we're going to wrap things up. And as I always say, we're going to encourage everyone to go out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. Until next time, I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the Coming Out Lounge, and we'll catch you real soon.
Thank you for joining us today with the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemens. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for the Coming Out Lounge.